justice for the human family. We demand it. Justice, truth, freedom, equality's a must. Us decolonization of the planet. So bust this. People be the power. Now we build the justice. Pouring ancestral divinations. How we build the justice. Welcome the planet to the podcast. Build the justice. Build the justice. Build the justice. Build. Is to add on or do away with justice.
Welcome to Building Justice, a podcast by Sacramento State's Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice. We explore critical issues affecting our communities with the hopes of creating a healthier and more just world. I'm Ryan McMurray. I am a Sac State alumnus. I'm also the chief editor at Seventh Gap Media. And I'm here with Dr. Tomar Johnson, professor of sociology and president at Seventh Gap Media. And Christopher Birch, San Francisco-based artist and lead illustrator at Seventh Gap Media. So I want to start just by having both of you introduce yourselves, tell us a little about yourselves. Tomar, let's start with you.
All right. Thank you for having me. Thank you for hosting this event here. I'm Dr. Tomar Johnson, and I'm born and raised in the Bay Area. I actually am a community college product, went to Solano Community College after high school, received a football scholarship, ended up graduating from New Mexico with a bachelor's degree in both sociology and political science. I ended up coming back home at Sac State and getting my master's degree in sociology from CSU Sacramento. So go Hornets. And then I received my doctorate from UC Davis. I'm currently a college professor, have been now for, this is my 18th year. And I'm also the department chair and have been on multiple committees, everything from being the vice president elect at the California for the California Sociological Association to being on the board of directors for the Pacific Sociological Association.
Wonderful. Yeah, I agree. Go Hornets. We are both Hornets for life.
Stingers up.
Stingers up. Christopher, how about you?
So I was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri. Graduated from University City High School, and went to Columbia College in Columbia, Missouri, off of an art scholarship. I've been pretty steadfast in my art practice since I was 15. And after graduating, I worked as an art teacher in the St. Louis Public Schools and then came out to San Francisco in 2006 to get my master's at the San Francisco Art Institute. And since then, I've been focused on art, public art projects that speak to the expansiveness of Black people, of humanity, in order to inject narratives that are often not seen in the world. And I work a lot with mythology and narratives within my studio practice. And I've also created several educational workshops that combine myth-making and identity called Reflective Mythologies.
That is wonderful. And for our listeners who maybe have not seen Christopher's artwork, I can tell you I have seen it and it is incredible.
Thank you.
Can we find you on Instagram just by typing in your name?
No, there's a, unfortunately, I have a pretty Christopher Birch is, I'm being beat out by billionaire venture capitalists on Google and social media. So that's my goal to beat. If I could beat out a billionaire venture capitalist, I'm doing all right. But the best way is at Goya, G-O-Y-A underscore Goon, G-O-O-N.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So I know that I've mentioned Seventh Gap Media a few times now, and our listeners probably don't know what that is. So Tomar, can you tell us what is Seventh Gap Media and what is its mission statement and overarching values?
Oh, that's a great question. And, you know, this was a concept that it took a while to come up with. There were multiple names that were floating around in my head and speaking to others about it as well. But Seventh Gap Media is a dynamic and forward-thinking publishing company. And we will make our mark on the world of media and creative content. We were founded on the principles of diversity, inclusion, innovation, and excellence. And we will continue to become a prominent player in the ever-evolving landscape of publishing. We have a commitment to delivering high-quality content, and that is important for us. When I was putting together this company, the two people that continually stuck out in my head were you, Ryan, as the chief editor, and Christopher as the chief illustrator, artist, and et cetera. I've seen your work, Ryan, and I've seen Christopher's work, and you two have a gift, and I genuinely mean that. And so bringing you into Seventh Gap Media, at the heart of it, has allowed me to create this level of content that will be forever changing. And, you know, at the end of this, you know, we hope to inspire and connect people from all backgrounds, all interests, and get them to start having conversations about diversity, equity, and inclusion. So.
Very cool. I want to talk a little bit more about how we came up with the name Seventh Gap, because I remember that conversation. You know, I had suggested Seventh Direction, and then we Googled that and we found out that there was already a company called Seventh Direction. And then I remember you had asked me, have you ever heard of the Gap Band? And I say, yeah. And then what did you say after that?
Yes, sir. That was a conversation. And yeah, the Gap Band, you know, they were a late 70s, early 80s group that my parents loved and I grew up listening to. And I learned this once I got into college. I believe it was actually at Sac State in Professor Todd Migliaccio's class that the Gap Band got their name from the main streets in Black Wall Street, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And those streets were Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. And that's how that gap, right? That's how they came up with the name. But, you know, going a little bit further into the number seven and how that came up, that was a conversation, right, Ryan, we had in multiple spaces, and it just kept, the number seven just kept popping up. And one of the things I remember you saying was there's obviously a reason, right? The number seven keeps coming into play. And so we both did a little bit of more research, and I remember you coming back and saying, you know, the number seven is highly revered in the Native American community. And it's important, right, that we are representing all of who we are as a collective unit. And so, yeah, that's how we came up with it, basically, was, you know, again, looking at diversity and inclusion and making sure that, you know, we represent all facets of our communities.
Exactly, man. Exactly. I remember that conversation well. And it just sort of speaks to, you know, we went back and forth so many times in so many different iterations of names. And that spirit of collaboration, though, was always there. And that's something that I really value about this.
Absolutely.
So, Christopher, I want to know more about how you came to be a part of this project and what your initial thoughts were about it, because I know that Tomar had contacted you, and that I was not present for that conversation, though. So tell us a little bit more about that.
So me and Tomar met because of one of my best friends I grew up with in St. Louis, Shedrick Kelly, and his wife, Alicia, came to San Francisco and they brought the kids. And Tomar is Alicia's cousin, correct?
Through marriage, yes.
Through marriage, yeah. And so we all went out to his house in Vallejo. First time meeting, and they had the spades table set up. And I was like, oh yeah, this is gonna be fun. So I didn't know anything about Tomar, who he is, his experiences or anything, but we broke bread as a lot of Black people do over spades. And that's how you and how I grew up is that's how you really get to know somebody, right? Because it's you're laughing, you're joking, you playing around, and it's just a good time, and it's a way that you know, every space player, every Black space player, every person that plays space knows sitting at that table is serious, but it's also fun. So from there we met, and then we stayed in contact through social media. It was there that Tomar saw my craft and my practice, and through the mural work and through exhibitions and things that I posted. And he reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to participate as the artist for Seven Gap Media. And my initial thoughts were, this is amazing, A, because for me, ownership over content production is truly important. I would say the impulse, the ethos that Tomar is coming from is aligned with mine, and the importance and the urgency in which Tomar is coming from is aligned with mine. So we have a lot of shared values that are really important. And, you know, when you meet people with those levels of deep shared values and they see the urgency that you see, it's refreshing. And so I was on board at that point because I was like, this is aligned with why I create what I create. So it's an opportunity to further influence the culture in positive manners. And it's an opportunity to further push self-affirming narratives into the world. So that's the reason why I decided to be a part of Seven Cap Media.
Wonderful, wonderful. I should probably clarify for our listeners at this point that the three of us have written, edited, and illustrated a book for children, middle grades adventure novel. Tomar wrote the book. I edited the book, and Christopher, you illustrated this book. Mm-hmm. Tomar, can you give us the title and then give us a brief summary of the plot? Not too many spoilers, though.
Definitely can't give the spoilers. this and the beautiful part about this, Ryan, is that, you know, we've spoken ad nauseum about this, the three of us, that this isn't just a book. Right. This is a movement. And we are all in this to help make a change, to create representation for children who are generally marginalized in the media spaces. So in that, in our conversations, we wanted to make sure to create a title, right, that could bring kids to it. And so came up with Mysteries of a Middle Schooler. And since this is the first volume, decided with Let the Adventures Begin. Again, this is the first of many. And people who don't know, this book was inspired by my two children, the older two children, because I remember them growing up in spaces and it being tough to find books with characters of color. Our youngest child has a little bit more of an advantage now with, you know, ebooks everywhere, right? And so right. There's a larger space for him to be able to find these. But our older two didn't have this access like the younger one has. And so, yeah, that's kind of where the inspiration came from. And so you'll see a lot of that throughout all of the books, right? But the first book is about, eternal twins, Evie and Marcus. And they're getting ready to start this adventure going into fifth grade, which, you know, in many areas, that's called middle school.
Right.
And this school is a pretty, you know, prominent school that they had to get into. It wasn't just something that, right, they applied and got in. No, they had to have good grades. They had to be active in their communities, right? They had to bring something to the table to enter this school. So they both get in. And, the plot twist is, anytime you get into something, it can generally be too good to be true, right? And so Evie and Marcus end up having this history teacher that they find out later on, that a few of their people that they are connected with have also had this history teacher. And, you know, some might say he's grumpy. Some might say he's, you know, creates a little more discipline. Some might say he's just tired and worn out from an educational system here that, you know, really doesn't value teachers the way we should. But in that, they have to create this history project. And so they actually end up creating an app with a friend of theirs. And this app allows them to go into spaces that others aren't allowed to be in or can't get into yet. And so in this, they use that to help them create this history project that they have to do. And so there's a lot of plot twists, though, throughout, right, this book. And I don't want to give too much more. But it was important that, you know, the aspects of technology were put in here. The aspects of representation were put in here. The aspects of accountability, right, for young children. But it is also the aspect of having fun and being able to go to a place, right, mentally that, you know, we generally can't get to just by sitting down. And so hopefully this book does that for the readers.
I just want to say that was an excellent job of not giving away any spoilers. probably much better than I could have done. So
no, I'm gonna tell you, I had to think about that a few times, right? Because I was getting ready to say something and I literally had to bite my lip. But I want the people who are hearing this podcast to be excited and want to purchase this book for their family, their friends, their children, and even for themselves. Because again, it is an adventure, and it's an adventure that we can all sometimes get into an escape from. you know, from the realities of our everyday lives. And so I think that's really important for people to know.
Definitely is. It definitely is. Christopher, I'm wondering something. How did you approach the project that you were asked to do? And then, you know, do you have like a specific process for creating the art that you create? Or does the process depend on what it is you're creating?
So I approached the project pretty open-minded because I wanted to absorb as much information that Tomar had in the book, the details. So I approached it first as a person that loves to read. Right. And and really just want to get a sense of Tomar's writing style and kind of like the textures of the world that Evie and Marcus inhabit. And so from there, I just kind of looked at what, like the idea of the heroine or hero image for the book cover, right? The first thing that people see in that amount of drama that needs to be there in order for that to immediately attract, but then also to tell that story. So I really just, and I thought about what elements would be in there that would give that sense of mystery, adventure, intrigue, and that's really where I began. And then from there, I just fleshed out these ideas over several drawings and just took my time with it and trusted the process. Luckily, I've done enough design work throughout my career in which moving in spaces as a storyteller, myself, as someone that loves literature. So for me, it was like, this is just another, you know, another way to approach it. But I wanted to approach it from the standpoint that removed my own individual, like, aesthetic twist in things and really keep it, like, in tune to what Tomar was getting at in the book.
That's really interesting. And, you know, I have to say, I find it really amazing, just your ability to like draw emotion from me when I look at the artwork that you create, just by looking at it. I am not a visual artist, but I know good art when I see it. And I'm really happy that you're a part of this project.
No, thank you. I'm excited about it as well. I'm excited to this project means a lot, and to work with y'all has been really refreshing and really invigorating for multiple reasons, and it'll probably take up the entire length of the recording time. But just know that like this is also really inspiring for me to be a part of this.
That's really great. So Tomar, I know that earlier you mentioned Dr. Todd Malaccio from Sacramento State. And I, as it so happens, I took a sociology of pop culture class with him. And then I also was an instructional assistant for that same sociology of pop culture class as a grad student. So I want to explore, just from a sociological viewpoint, why media representation is so important. You know, there was a lot of talk about representation in media in those classes. So why does that matter so much?
It's crazy how, right, 6 degrees of separation, right? It's real. You had Todd as a professor. I had Todd as my thesis advisor. And where this kind of media representation, or why this concept of media representation is important, is because in my thesis was based on African-American boys' experience in sports, right? And why is it sports is so revered for African-American youth? And so one of the most important aspects that during my research, doing my research in that time frame, was I found this concept created by Dr. Harry Edwards, and it was called the Triple Tragedy. And it's this, the overarching theme is basically that African-American boys are bombarded with things that are unhealthy for them long term via the media. And so when there's a lack of representation in every space that African-American boys and girls step into, that becomes very problematic. In that, this book is centered around that, right? It's making sure that there is a level of representation for those children that were generally not recognized, whether it was in books or textbooks, or whether it's on the big screen, or whether it's in Congress, or in their doctor's office, or going into a classroom and seeing an instructor. Having people that look like you, that have come from your communities, that understand who you are and the things that you have gone through, are so important for youth development. And so in that, we are here to push forward in making sure that there is never again a generation that has to deal with the lack of representation in the media. And, myself, you, Ryan, and you've done an absolute amazing job at recognizing who you are and what you can do to help, right, push this forward. And then with Christopher and, his thought process and how his art reflects all of the various aspects of different communities. It's beautiful. And so at the end of it, I hope that we can just continue to build on this and make sure that the youth know that there's someone there that genuinely cares about how they are being represented.
Indeed. Indeed.
Absolutely. For our listeners, I should mention that I am a cisgender, heterosexual white man. And I grew up reading a lot. I love reading. And when I really stopped to think about it, I can say that all of the books that I read when I was a kid, the main characters, the protagonists, all looked like me. And so when we got to talking about this project and really got into it, I tried to come at it from a point of view of, like, the world can seem like a pretty terrible place sometimes. And there's not a whole lot I can do about a lot of that. But there are things that I can do to make the world a better place. And so being a part of this project, helping kids recognize themselves in the protagonists of an adventure novel, that's something that I can do. And it's something that I enjoy doing.
Right. And I have to interject here real quick, because people don't understand how important having allies in the dominant community are for marginalized or minority communities. And not only do I consider you an ally, I consider you a friend. I consider you an advocate. I consider you someone who has recognized their place as a privileged cisgender Caucasian male, but yet you're using that privilege to help create a space where others can feel included as well. And that is truly amazing. So thank you.
Well, thank you both. And, you know, I consider both of you friends as well. I think Christopher said in our last meeting, you know, we got like a Three Musketeers sort of thing going on.
Indeed.
It's pretty cool. It's so, Christopher, I want to move into a discussion about some of the challenges that BIPOC artists face that aren't typically experienced by artists that are part of the dominant culture. You know, as I said, I'm not an artist. I don't know a lot about that world. So could you tell us about that, please?
That's a question that I've been asking and experiencing for about 30 years. And I think it goes back to what the question that you posed to Tomar about representation, who has the power to represent themselves in a accurate light without the distortion of stereotypes and assumptions and power dynamics that often grotesquely deform images of representation. So, you know, we as human beings are instinctively drawn to want to see our image in the world. And when we receive a reflection that is distorted, that then becomes a base point on how we see ourselves. So the lack of representation or the abundance of distorted representations can have deep psychological impacts. It has it on all of us. I remember growing up and loving to read. But it wasn't until 11th grade that I actually was able to see myself in a novel. And realizing how powerful of a shift that was. Fundamental moment when I was just like, oh, wow, this is something that is talking about my experiences. This person I feels like me. That level of association is powerful in how we view ourselves in the world. And so art is merely just a reflection of quote unquote the dominant culture. And I definitely have an issue with the term dominant. But it is what it is, and it's used to explain white culture in America and how pervasive that culture is. So as an artist, I really look at how to combat that. What narratives aren't being said? What narratives aren't being brought to the forefront? And oftentimes, those narratives that aren't being brought to the forefront are narratives that talk about the expansiveness and power of Black humanity, Black care, Black myth, like just the Black lives, intimate lives in America. And I think from that standpoint, how I work and how I approach projects is from that standpoint. It's an immense love for humanity, first and foremost. And then it's how can I push a culture that doesn't create grotesque and distorted reflections of myself into the world. As an artist, I have the ability to create images. What am I going to do with that? So that's the fundamental questions I ask myself. And then you have the art world as a business, and that's a completely different story. But I will say, as long as every artist of Black artists, as long as, and you know, I have a problem with the term people of color, but folks from marginalized communities, as long as they know their power, know that they have the ability to influence culture and create a shift through their work, through their care, through their vulnerability, and through their strength, poetry and art will always be a necessary and radical component in pushing culture forward in a positive manner.
I think you said something really important there that I want to touch on. I mean, it was all important, but the thing that stuck out to me was that a lot of times when we talk about representation, there's a focus on the lack of representation, mm-hmm. but it that's not all it is. It's mm-hmm. it's that the representation that is there is often distorted in a negative way.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's very, very important, Ryan, right? When having these conversations and understanding that even when there is representation via the media about, you know, and Christopher doesn't like it, but, you know, people of color. So when that's just a general term identifying, right, African-Americans, people of Asian descent, Latinx, Latino, you know, Native American, et cetera, et cetera. But with that being said, understanding that, again, right, we have a job to do to fight against this narrative that has been painted and given to us by the dominant culture. Again, that's some word that Christopher doesn't like, and yeah, dominant from a sociological space, right?
Yeah,
from a sociological term, right? It means the people in the positions of power, right? Mm-hmm. And so even if you look at spaces like South Africa, right, where there's a large majority of Africans, right, traditional Africans there, the dominant group still is, right, those of fairer skin because they hold the positions of power. But with that, again, being said, you know, it is our job to create narratives that genuinely reflect who we are and the many spectrums that we are part of, right? And again, this was part of that triple tragedy that Dr. Harry Edwards continued to speak about, is that they will bombard us with, you know, in the media, with drug dealers and athletes and gangbangers and single mothers and et cetera, et cetera. But where are the doctors? Where are the dentists? Where are the firefighters? Where are the artists? Where are the writers? Where are the editors? Where are the college professors? Where are the college presidents? Right? And so, again, it is our job to make sure that this next generation of youth can see themselves in all of those spaces. And with Seventh Gap Media, that's what we are going to do. We're going to make sure to bring that into the homes and classrooms of any youth that, you know, has ever felt this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that in itself is a beautifully revolutionary purpose, that meaning, you know, that level of not to see yourself in the world is psychologically damaging. You know,
in every aspect, yes, yeah, right? Yeah. Not just in certain spaces, in every aspect, right?
And so that's truly, truly important. And and that was one of the core values that made me realize this Seventh Gap Media is a place I need to be.
Me too. And I am just so excited for whatever is coming next. So this next question is actually for both of you. If you could send a message directly to the kids who are going to read about themselves in the pages of the book or see themselves on the cover, what would that message be?
You want to take this one or?
Go ahead, Chris. I'll let you start. Yeah.
I would say continue to question, continue to investigate, continue to protect your imagination, and continue to grow. Your education is your responsibility. It's not your teachers. It's not your parents. It is yours. That is a gift. Treat it well.
Amen. I love that.
Powerful message.
Yeah. So I want to read you a quote from a kid who is a YouTube influencer that I was able to get the book to early, right, to have them review it. And this kid's name is Super Amani 4. Okay. And he's on YouTube. And Super Amani 4 said, "When I read an adventure book, I don't just read. I like to dream, feel, and see myself going through the adventure. This book did all of that." Fellas, when I tell you that that message right there is everything that we needed to hear, you know, I don't think it could have been put any better for the youth. And I hope they really are going to hear that quote from that young man. He's 11 years old. And you know, again, he said that that's what this book did.
Those are some pretty powerful words. I mean, thank you, Super Amani, for. Okay, so I think by the time this podcast episode airs, the book is going to be published. It will be out. It will be available for purchase. Where can people find the book and the artwork for purchase?
I want to just say this. There's a couple little caveats in the book that I think the youth will genuinely appreciate. And I believe that the parents of the children purchasing this book will also appreciate, because Christopher did an amazing job at giving them spaces where they could be themselves. And I'll leave it at that about those spaces. But this book will be available on all platforms. We are also working on currently getting some pretty prominent individuals within the media space to purchase a large portion of these books so that, you know, we can go and hand them out to some of the kids who generally wouldn't be able to afford them. And so, you know, this book is bigger than me. This book is bigger than Seventh Gap Media. This book is larger than us as a collective. And so, you know, we will have this in audible form. We will have this again, you know, paperback, e-form. But this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. Ryan and Christopher and I, we're trying to put together a schedule here for a book tour. And, you know, hopefully, you know, people who are hearing this, right, aren't just at Sac State, but, you know, this message gets out to a larger community as well. And the book tour will go, you know, up and down the West Coast all the way into, you know, the Midwest, touching some East Coast cities and down in the South as well. But I also want you all to know that your local bookstores will also have access to this book. So if they don't have it and you go in there, please ask for it. Because we want the local bookstores to win in their respective spaces as well, because those are the spaces where many of the kids that we are trying to reach can walk into and then possibly see themselves in this adventure.
Excellent. And with that, I think we are going to wrap this episode up. Thank you for listening. We hope our ongoing conversations spark understanding, empathy, and motivation to join the struggle for a better future for all.
All the penalties and the rewards based on the actions. Now, time for building justice. Building justice. Time for building justice. Building justice. Time for building justice.
You just listened to the Building Justice podcast. The information contained in this podcast, including its title and description, represent the views and opinions of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Sacramento State, Chris J., and/or the Building Justice Podcast Committee.